Moving to Korea was probably the best and most impactful decision I've made in my life, but it doesn't mean it was an easy one. I'd just finished my degree and came to the realization that I had no interest in working in that field. It was a hard realization to come to, and one that was really obvious looking back. I didn't like how isolated the work was, how tedious and drawn out the research was. And on the social side of things, I could see how excited my peers were. Some of them had graduated early and had started working and really found the work satisfying. And from my family, they were just so proud of what I studied. My dad had studied the same thing, so I was kind of following in his footsteps. He even offered to get me an entry-level job at his workplace. I decided to go teach children in South Korea English instead, something I had absolutely no experience in. I never even tutored. I had never set foot in South Korea, and I didn't know anyone there. On the ride to the airport when my parents were dropping me off, it really hit how crazy it was to leave every person you'd ever known in your life behind, to go to a job that could very well be a scam and leave you stranded in a country where you don't speak the language. It's absolutely absurd. But the curiosity and need for adventure that led me to that decision has also given me so many other crazy, wonderful experiences in my life that I think had I let fear win out for that decision would have kept me back from so much else that has led me to the life that I have now. Welcome to Self-Help Junkie, the podcast where we explore the world of personal development through the eyes of book enthusiasts. I'm your host, Erica Ng, a communication coach and your resident bookworm. This season, we'll be focused on finding purpose, motivation, and inspiration. But before we dive into the conversation with our guest, let's get a one-minute summary of the book. From Strength to Strength is the title and central theme of Sarah Henderson's book. Through her journey, she shows us practical steps and exercises that can help you do the same. There's a bunch of different stages through her journey, but we're just going to focus on a couple. The first one is understanding strength. Henderson delves into the concept of strength, exploring its various dimensions, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. She emphasizes the importance of recognizing and nurturing these different forms of strength within oneself. Next, we have overcoming adversity. Inevitably, we are going to be faced with adversity in life, and the importance of resilience and perseverance cannot be overstated. We also have growth mindset, which I think most people are now familiar with, as well as setting goals and taking action. I think the taking action part specifically really spoke to me. Another one that may be a little bit unexpected is nurturing relationships. She explores the significance of relationships in personal growth and well-being. And lastly, one of my favorites is celebrating success. In the final section, Sarah encourages readers to celebrate their achievements and acknowledge their progress. And with that, let's dive in. After 3 decades in advertising, Jackie Brown's frustration with her work led her to a profound shift. Clarifying her strengths, values, and purpose, she transitioned from boosting businesses to fostering personal growth. Drawing on her extensive experience in communication and leadership, she now guides dissatisfied professionals towards meaningful career momentum. Jackie's kind curiosity provides a safe space for clients to explore their goals. She serves as a communication specialist coach on the BetterUp platform and runs her own coaching practice. Jackie, welcome to the show.
Well, hello, Erica. Thank you for having me. It's such an honor to be here.
Thank you. So you were in advertising for 30 years. How did you initially get started in the industry?
So my start in advertising was as a graphic designer. I was definitely interested in how to take art, my interest in art, into something that might be able to make money. So certainly graphic design was one of those options, and I really leaned into it. That was my degree. And then I spent several years as a designer and then moved my way up into management and copywriting and doing all sorts of marketing and advertising.
And now that you're not doing something that's so graphics heavy, are you returning to some of that as a hobby in your own time?
I definitely look for ways to create that I have learned is one of the things that does bring me a lot of joy. And it doesn't have to be design. For instance, watercolor is something I've been really leaning into. Mm-hmm. Certainly creating content for my own practice is a source of joy as well. Sometimes it's just, you know, framing the scenery as I'm taking my walk, and I might even grab my phone to do that. But I absolutely do look for ways to foster the artistic side of me.
Right. You must be a really patient person. I've done watercolors before, and it's just so much waiting.
Yes, it does have a little bit of waiting and learning how to play with the water. But absolutely, you know, to that point, I've learned some patience just in the process of doing it.
For sure. So let's dive a little bit into your transition and into the book that you've brought in with you. Where were you in life when you initially came across this book? Was it at the beginning of your thinking of transitioning to a different career? Where were you?
Sure. So looking back now, it feels like it was at the beginning of my thought process and just the exploration. But it was probably more of the midterm of I had already thought that maybe advertising wasn't a good industry for me where I was at this point. And then it just happened to have come out, so it was getting a lot of media buzz. So it definitely came to me at the right time. You know, that whole thing about the right teacher and the right student coming together at the right time. This was that book for me.
Right. And can you take us through, you said that it was kind of like midway through, what was drawing you away from advertising and what was keeping you there?
Oh gosh. The keeping me there. So what was drawing me away from it was the sense that I wanted to be doing, something more meaningful. I thought that by doing communications work, that was going to be satisfying my purpose or a purpose. But as I continued to explore what was agitating me, I found that helping businesses grow was starting to feel disingenuous. I started to feel like I was coercing the person on the other side of the ad to buy this product. And I just really didn't want to spend more time than necessary doing that. And then I thought, well, do I have to spend any time coercing people into doing something just to help a business grow that may not necessarily have, you know, the consumer's best interest at heart?
Right. And I think that's so common. Like, you start with thinking like, maybe I need to lessen this in my life, to being like, wait, do I have to have any of this in my life? I think that's a very common experience for people. And what was keeping you there?
Right. And I think that's a great question, because what I hear a lot and what I felt is, well, what about these 25 years I've spent in this industry? You know, am I throwing away this experience? Am I throwing away my credibility? And some of that is honestly, you know, ego. I certainly felt that I was a leader of sorts in my local community in this industry. And what would it be like? It's actually interesting that as I was making the transition, this was last year, about this time in February, I found out I was getting a Lifetime Achievement Award for advertising in my local area. And on the way to the show, when I found out about it, it was a surprise. And I turned to my husband and I said, but I'm leaving advertising. And he said, that's okay. That's okay. You know, they can still acknowledge the work that you've done, and they don't really have to know tonight that you're leaving advertising. So absolutely. It was, especially then, it was hard to, in a way, feel like I was turning my back on them. But what I found is that it's just an expansion of my network, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's just an expansion of my experience. There's so many skills and character traits and personality strengths that we just continue to carry on. It doesn't mean that I'm stopped being Jackie, or that the experiences that I've had don't mean as much, or I've thrown them away. They're still so valuable.
For sure. And it sounds like you found a lot of success, and other people in your community are recognizing your success. So I imagine that fear of failure, even if it's not actually going to come true, it's just like nagging in the back of your mind, like, you're good at this, you're good at nothing else.
Yes, absolutely. A fear of failure is something that I continue to need to address almost on a daily basis. I mean, just yesterday I was thinking about something to post because it just feels so much more vulnerable as I'm in a newer industry. I've certainly been addressing, you know, what we call the imposter syndrome. And that fear of failure is certainly part of it. You know, what are people going to think? Yeah. And is this post going to do anything? Am I going to do anything? So absolutely, fear of failure is rampant.
For sure. I think we can all feel that. And when it comes to the book, you said that it was the right book at the right time for you. Mm-hmm. What initially caught your attention? Because there's a million self-help books out there. So what did you connect with?
So this one is actually subtitled The Second Part of Life, and that part really started to resonate with me. At the time, I didn't call it a midlife crisis, and I'm not sure that I would even still want that term, but certainly there are a lot of physical, mental, emotional occurrences that are happening, and this book actually points out some physical changes in our brains that made so much sense to me and really helped me understand more of what I was going through.
Mm-hmm. Can you speak more on that point? Like, what is changing in our bodies and our minds?
Yes, a lot of us really get nervous about getting older and maybe losing some mental faculties. He does acknowledge, and this is based on research, that there is this whole thing about fluid intelligence does get a little bit less active, but crystallized intelligence gets more active and more engaged as we get older. And the difference between the two is something that I really felt in my career. Fluid intelligence is the ability for us to come up with ideas very quickly and to welcome new ideas very quickly. And then as we age, those new ideas are still around, but they're not as easily attainable. But what is easily or more readily available is this access or library of information that we've stored in our brain. So it's like a library, you know. So if we think about crystallized intelligence being the really amazing librarian, that she can go in and collect different scenarios and events that have happened in our life, different types of information, and say, okay, we need a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And then it's our wisdom that we're putting out to the world that really gets a lot better as we go through some of these physical changes in our brain.
Right. And as you're speaking about that, it's making me think that maybe midlife crisis is, we always imagine it as someone like snapping out of it and then kind of like abandoning all their responsibilities, like doing a 180. But it sounds like maybe if people understood that they are changing, that they have to get to know a different side of themselves as they're progressing through life, some people can realign in a way that's not as drastic and not as irresponsible. So maybe we need to have a new term where we have a healthy way of going through a midlife crisis.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people relate or think about, you know, somebody buying a sports car when they were just driving a station wagon. So absolutely. It doesn't mean that we are burning it all to the ground just to find ourselves again. we can absolutely uncover mm-hmm. what might have been getting choked out. I'm starting to think of it as a garden because I love my flower bed. So when they get all choked with weeds, especially mm-hmm. in the springtime, then, you know, I can strip away those weeds and really get down to the core, the beauty of the garden. And that's what I feel like is can happen to a lot of us. You know, the core of us is still there, but we get choked out with all the daily grind, responsibilities, right. That we can really start to lose who our core self is.
Right. Like it's habits or routines that are no longer serving you that once did, but not being conscious and tending to your current garden is really important. And on that point, he also speaks about success addiction and workaholism. You're saying, like, can you speak more to that on your experience with it?
Yes. And this is actually one of the reasons why I went out and grabbed the web address Shifting Success, because it was a huge success for me, or a huge shift for me, to rethink about success. As I talked about my business failing, you know, the success of it to other people and to me at that point was very externally driven. You know, those markers of how many clients do you have? Right. Are you booked with speaking engagements? Or whatever those external, you know, how many, you know, six figures do you have a month? And all that type of marker that is really rampant for success. Mm-hmm. So when that becomes what we're striving for, we can, again, lose sight of who we are and what really brings us true happiness, which turns out to be more intrinsic than extrinsic. So the book absolutely helped me shift success, and I hope to help people take a look at what they mark as success to see if it still does align with who they are and who they want to be.
Right. And why do you think that is? Why is it that extrinsic motivators or marks of success is so prevalent when it really should be the opposite?
if we knew the answer to that, right, then we might need to start a huge movement with that. But, you know, I hear more and more people questioning this. So I'm hoping that society is starting to see that these traditional markers of success might actually be hindering us as a society, but they are certainly just really ingrained in, especially, you know, the American culture, that, you know, you got to have the White House, the shiny cars, the Instagrammable vacations, so that you are seen as a success.
Right. And definitely when it comes to extrinsic things, it's easier to quantify, like whether it be a number or in a picture. It's not like you can take a picture and be like, I have great communication with my partner.
Like, right.
It's so much more about quality and about like kind of boring stuff. Like I noticed that he doesn't like his eggs this way and we did it this way. And like that improved our relationship, but like it's really weird to talk about the tiny things. So like the big shiny things are the ones that I think it's easy to focus on. But like you said, most people are starting to shift their priorities. So for yourself, like, what are the intrinsic motivators that you're trying to foster in yourself and in the clients that you're working with?
It's definitely self-awareness. I'm really seeing that is such a key factor for helping people become more in tune with, and that's really the definition of self-awareness, is becoming more in tune with who we are and what we need so that we can then be in a better position to serve others. So that is key for me. I also really enjoy watching people get to know themselves again.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, curiosity is something that I've always had. You know, there's a lot of people talk about the toddlers who ask a lot of questions. I don't think I ever grew out of that phase.
Right.
So it really, it served me well in advertising, asking my clients, you know, what their business needed. And now I see the curiosity coming through in my coaching as well.
Right. So
when I have a chance to create something each day, to connect with someone, to use my curiosity, then that's when I know that it's been a good day for me, that I'm taking my talents and helping others.
And it seems like a lot of finding purpose and finding motivation does start with awareness and asking yourself questions. Do you have any particular exercises or things that you've done that have helped you or your clients find clarity?
So I do have a recipe that I call it for purpose. Yes, it's really fun. I borrowed it from Dr. Michael Gervais, who's been a sports psychologist. So it really starts with selecting one or two of our talents or strengths, the ones that we tend to interact with other people with. So for instance, it's my curiosity, and I'm also kindness is one of my top strengths. So I'm kindly curious when I interact with other people. So that's the first thing, is to look at your top strengths that you use as you interact with others. And then take some time to envision your ideal world. How are people interacting with each other? So then we combine these two aspects. How can you use your talents and strengths to create that ideal world? Again, it's something larger than ourselves. So as we do that, then we can almost come up with a little statement about what our purpose might be in this phase of our life. How does that sound? Does that sound like something that...
It's honestly something that I feel like I've done before as well. As you were talking there, you were talking about like how you interact with others. What about for introverts? Like, what about the people who are like, ideally, I don't have to talk to that many people.
Right. But interacting with others doesn't mean it has to be, you know, in a group of people. So for me, I consider myself an introvert in that I connect better with people on a one-to-one level. I can do okay in groups, but it drains me, you know? So certainly how I interact with somebody, but it doesn't even necessarily need to be on a personal level. So if somebody finds that their talent is more about planning, or that they are more artistic, then those are things that can absolutely serve a greater purpose, but you don't have to necessarily interact with people. You know, I'm sure we've all encountered art that has really impacted us, but we didn't necessarily meet the artist.
And when it comes to the ideal world that you paint for yourself, do you have... like, what is your ideal world? And has one of your clients given you something that's very different from your own? Just to give us an idea of the range that we could come up with.
Oh, sure. So for me, my ideal world is when other people, when everybody is supporting other people. So we are all, you know, supporting and feeling connected so that our communities get stronger as we get stronger individually. So I've certainly had clients who are more focused on some of the more social justice kind of concerns. And so they bring that to the forefront, that, you know, their ideal world is of one where children aren't hungry anymore. So it can certainly be very big and grandiose, but it can also be, you know, very central and local and individual.
And we were talking about success addiction earlier, and as you were talking about your ideal world where you can help the community around you, how do we prevent ourselves from falling into that like milestone of like, I helped four people today? And like, how do you find the intrinsic motivators instead?
Oh, that's interesting to think about instead of how many people. Mm-hmm. A lot of times the goals can be about the effort that we put into it, mm-hmm. about the process that goes into it, mm-hmm. So that we are less tied to the result or to the performance, mm-hmm. and we're more tied to the process and how, again, we can be using that strength. It doesn't mean that we'll get the result, mm-hmm. but the actual doing of it can often bring that joy and fulfillment.
When people like realign and they figure out what's working for them now, do you think this is an ongoing process? Like, is this going to be every 10 years you have to like realign, or do we get some sort of break in the rest of our lives?
I would imagine it's going to serve us well if we check in with ourselves every now and then. Mm-hmm. I'm really the big proponent of reflection, mm-hmm. you know, time to ourselves, whether it's a solo trip or taking a morning, you know, every week or however we can make time, but right. certainly reflection. As we can make the time for it will help us, I think, stay ahead of it. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hoping is mm-hmm. that I'm able now to stay ahead of it with these tools that I've learned through right. this process. I'm not sure that there's a time frame that we could, you know, stick to it, but absolutely, right. if we can make the time for self-reflection, I think that might be a good way to go.
For sure. Yeah. It's interesting hearing, your transition, because I feel like I had mine at a much younger age. I finished university, didn't want to go into what my degree was. So I went abroad and I've been abroad for 10 years and probably from when I was 23 up until I was 30, I was just like, I don't know, move to another country. I don't know what I'm doing here. Move to a different country. And I think it gave me a lot of time to figure out what I wanted rather than what I've seen a lot of my friends living back home. They stuck to one career and they just kind of built themselves up. So I was hoping that I would avoid a midlife realignment where I could just be like, I already did my midlife crisis when I was in my 20s.
Yes. Well, hopefully by doing what you've done mm-hmm. and the things that are important to you now, mm-hmm. that you are staying ahead of it, that you're not going to be like me and get all choked over with weeds, mm. right? You're continuing to pull the weeds as you move through life.
Hopefully. Yeah. And on that note, we're coming to the end. If you had a message, if you could speak to the people who are having trouble and they're struggling finding their purpose and they're dealing with a lot of the stuff that you talked about, like where they feel guilty or scared to leave the life that they've built, not necessarily like dump it all in the dumpster, but right. Like right. transitioning, moving, pivoting, what words would you give them?
I would definitely encourage them to really get to know themselves again, mm-hmm. to take that time to become more familiar with what it is they do want, mm-hmm. Who they are even. There can be quite a shift in that, absolutely, depending on how long it's been since they've checked in on mm-hmm. who they are and what feels good to them and who they want to be.
Right.
So getting to know themselves, I think, is the first key. And there are lots of tools and exercises and books available for that.
Right.
I was at a big loss there for a while about how to even go about it.
Yeah.
But knowing that there are resources available, I hope helped other people. And I know when I started using them, they really helped me.
Right.
I was a big self-help junkie there. I really dove in pretty deep into all these books and resources, and they can absolutely help others as well.
Right. And I think kind of what you'd mentioned earlier too, start small. You don't have to change your career first. Like, get used to change. Maybe just like I order different food at the restaurant, or I'm going to get a haircut and then we graduate to like, I'm going to change my glasses.
Right.
And then eventually you're like, okay, maybe change isn't as scary and it can actually bring a lot of joy.
Absolutely. That's great advice really for all of us is, you know, the more comfortable we are with change, then the more that our life really opens up in just in general. I would also encourage people to keep exploring because it doesn't mean that you have to change jobs or industries or careers. I've had several clients who came in thinking that they were going to change. I'm so sick and tired of this job. I need you to help me figure out what to do next. But when we slowed it down, and they got to know themselves and what brings them joy, the type of work that they love doing and who they love doing it with, they were able to actually refocus their current job and find ways to do more of it there.
Amazing.
So that it doesn't mean that if we are struggling and we may not feel satisfied with our work, that we have to change it. We could just get to know ourselves and our work again, and really give ourselves a new opportunity, a fresh start.
And if people are looking to have a little bit of help and maybe want to reach out to you to help them on this journey, where can they find you?
I am very active on LinkedIn. So you can Google or LinkedIn search Jackie Brown Coach, and I should come up that way. And then my website is shiftingsuccess.com. So those are two great avenues to get some of those resources, to certainly get in touch with me, and I'd love to be able to help out.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Jackie. I hope that, this message reaches a lot of people who are in need of it.
Thank you, Erica. I appreciate the opportunity and to be on your show and to encourage other people to just get to know themselves, whatever phase of life and career they're in.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. This podcast was brought to you by me, Erica Ng, and my sound guy, Stevie, who is the reason there was a huge upgrade in the quality between episode 4 and 5 of season 1. If you enjoyed, please send this episode to a friend who could use the advice or someone who would find this a great listen. If you have thoughts or tips you'd like to share, please do at Self Help Junkie Pod on Instagram, Twitter, or Gmail. I'll see you guys next time.